From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
During the past year, the government says over 114,000 Illinois residents packed their bags and left for another state. Now, that number overwhelms the population of people who were either born or moved here.
61 social service agencies are locked in an ongoing legal battle with the state of Illinois over the ongoing budget impasse.
The social services lost their court case earlier this year. Without explanation, a Cook County judge said the state did not have to pay the social service agencies, even though they had contracts to provide things like early childhood education or shelter to people who are homeless.
If you don't open schools on time, everybody is upset. If you shut down social services or cause some pain to universities, somehow that doesn't affect everybody. I'm a believer this year that if we're really serious about getting the budget done, we don't separate out and fund K through 12 for a whole year and then have a mess with the rest of the budget. I say shut the schools down until we get a budget.
That's State Senator Dave Kaler, a Democrat from Peoria. He was speaking on WMBD-TV, and we'll talk more about what he had to say. Also this week, news that more people are leaving the state of Illinois, and a group of social service organizations taking another step toward getting their money from the state. We'll talk more about that on today's State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield, and our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Also, Brian Mackey, our Illinois Public Radio Statehouse reporter, and our guest in our Statehouse Bureau, Bernie Schoenberg, political writer and columnist with the State Journal Register. Bernie, good to have you on again.
Good to be here.
Brian, I'm going to start with you. What was Senator Kaler talking about?
Yeah, it was a discussion about whether there or what could bring an end to the budget standoff in Illinois. And he was noting the fact that of all the things that have not been paid for in a regular, normal fashion in the last 2 years, the one thing that the Illinois has been pretty good about actually passing bills signed by the governor, the normal budget process, is education spending for K through 12, at least, just we're just talking about kindergarten through high school. This doesn't include colleges and universities. And so what he was saying is that if we're really ever going to get an end to this impasse, it seems like the one thing that people haven't wanted to do is keep the schools from opening on time. And maybe that's what it would take, is if that sort of funding were to be imperiled, then maybe people would get serious about doing a real complete budget for state government.
Well, the schools are funded through this year, the fiscal year, but there is that possibility, I guess, if no budget agreement is put in place, that they could be back in play as we start in the fall, in August, when most schools start again. Charlie, the first thing I thought of when I heard that was that Senator Kaler, at least, is not necessarily optimistic anything will get resolved before at least maybe the end of the legislative session, around the end of this fiscal year.
Yeah, I think what he was suggesting is that the impasse is such that there has to be something very dramatic occur, something that would have everybody up in arms. There is real suffering going on throughout the state for some folks, the most vulnerable people in our society. But the majority of Illinoisans say in polls that, well, it really hasn't affected me. You know, I read about it, but it's no big deal. It's interesting, but it doesn't impact my daily life. On the other hand, if there were no funding for K through 12 education, and suddenly the local public school says, well, we're not opening this fall, figure out what to do with your kids, that would have people up in arms. That would drive a bargain, I think. It would require individual lawmakers who are being besieged by their constituents to go to the Democratic leadership on the one side of the aisle, to go to Bruce Rauner, who owns the Republicans, on the other side of the aisle, and say, look, we have to do something. It would take kind of a rebellion among the rank and file, maybe to force some kind of solution. And maybe that's what the senator is thinking of.
Nobody wants to be blamed for schools not opening. That's, I guess, the predicament, though, that lawmakers would be in, is if they went along with some idea like this and not funded schools, then they could be blamed, especially by the governor, for schools not starting on time.
Oh, yeah. And all of this has to do with blame, in my opinion. Everybody knows, I shouldn't say everybody, but Most people who've studied the issue believe that the state needs to increase revenues and cut programs. Nobody wants to take the blame for that. The Republicans want to blame it on the Democrats, especially Madigan. The Democrats want to blame it on the Republicans, especially Rauner. Who's going to wear the collar for when we have to raise taxes and cut programs? And so there's all this jockeying about blame. And as this contest between the elephants goes on, so to speak, the little people, the ants, are getting trampled.
I'd like to paraphrase an old proverb. Just an interesting side note to this. I mean, we've had 2 years of no budget agreement, and in the first year, the Democrats passed a budget, and the governor vetoed it all. It got no Republican votes, but the Republican governor just signed one part of it, and that was the education part, because I think he knew exactly what Charlie was just talking about, that if the schools close, then everybody's got the problem.
Well, and the same thing this last time around with this so-called stopgap budget. The only thing that was fully funded for FY17 was K-12 education.
Right, and that was at least done with agreement from both sides.
Yeah,
and we saw this how the strategy would play out right in that very interview where Senator Kaler made his comments. He was sitting there with another state senator named Jason Berrickman, a Republican, who immediately said, "Boy, I sure would hate to think that the Democrats are going to hold up the school funding. Mm-hmm. Democrat school funding. Democrat school funding." It was just kind of working those words together as much as he possibly could. And it's obvious that what their strategy would be, and this is what we saw play out last year. Even before anyone was sort of suggesting this out loud as a possibility heading into the current fiscal year, the governor and the Republicans were out there saying, boy, it would be terrible if the Democrats wanted to hold up the budget, keep the schools from opening so they could pass the way they want to do the budget process. Of course, as we've been saying, it's worth remembering that the governor has long talked about driving a wedge in the Democratic Party over social justice spending. So he's content to have sort of a government shutdown in some areas in terms of human service spending, which has limped along, higher education, which has really suffered. But you know, when it comes to schools, that's something where he has clearly been a lot more sensitive to see that there not be a shutdown.
Well, of course, schools getting money, but social service groups, a group of them known as the Pay Now Coalition, have not been getting paid, and they've been fighting this in court. They took some more steps this week to try to get their money. Brian, what's the latest on that?
Yeah, they've basically gone to an appellate court to ask to have reviewed. They said that the lower court had basically tossed their case out without much of an explanation. And so one of the interesting arguments they're making in their appeal is that these are human service providers. These are businesses, basically, that have contracts with state government to do things like take care of domestic violence victim, run homeless shelter, things like that. Things that maybe the state in the past might have done themselves and now has decided to outsource these services. The governor enters into a contract with these groups to do these services. And meanwhile, the governor has vetoed bills that the legislature passed, wildly out of balance, they will admit, both sides will say, but he has vetoed bills that would have actually funded these contracts that he signed. And so they're saying, one, it's wrong that the governor is entering into contracts that he clearly does not have any intention of paying. And they're also saying that as a matter of fairness, these groups should be paid on the same basis that state employees have been getting paid under a different case that's kept state employees working for the past 18 months, even though the legislature, as the Illinois Constitution says, has never appropriated money to pay state workers.
Bernie, that certainly gets into some discussions that I think send a chill up a lot of people's spines in the Springfield area when you start talking about the possibility of not being able to get paychecks to state workers. That's not something I would think that local leaders would want to see.
Well, this would be the blame situation.
See, tried at least in the courts.
Yeah, well, this would be the blame situation once again. I mean, Lisa Madigan's office, the attorney general, has never, that I'm aware of, formally proposed, you know, challenging in court that circuit court decision that has kept state employees being paid. But the mere rumor of that had the Governor Rauner team saying, oh, you know, they want to go to court and we love state employees and, you know, they want to stop you from being paid. You know, this is, again, another situation where if it weren't for that court order and if within a month state employee pay would dry up and you would have people off the job except perhaps those, you know, in prisons or whatever the the top security people under probably another court order, that would force some sort of resolution, or at least in the past, such things did. I remember in the early Jim Edgar years, it was, you know, a few weeks into the new fiscal year and state employees weren't going to get paid, and that put pressure on everybody to get in that room and get the deal done. So, people, certainly you're correct, Sean, that all the thousands of state employees in Springfield and elsewhere want to keep getting paid and doing their jobs. But if it stops, we'd probably, in this season of perpetual campaigning, you know, the blame game would start. I mean, we're still seeing the Republican Party put out almost daily press releases about how terrible Democrats are for sticking with Mike Madigan. In the middle of the time when the governor had said, I want to meet with the leaders every day until the end of the year because it's unacceptable, and then Madigan didn't show up to one meeting, then they had some meetings, then the governor canceled meetings because the Democrats weren't bringing a budget. So we're basically headed toward the new year right now with several days of nothing and an impending further disaster.
Charlie, we've been talking about the possibility of court interaction or not funding schools, things like this. Will it take something that drastic, you think, to break this logjam?
I'm beginning to wonder about that because, you know, months ago, pushing on 2 years now, I did a column in Illinois Issues where I foolishly predicted that I thought the new governor could work with Democratic majorities in the General Assembly because Democratic majorities in the General Assembly had worked well, actually better, with Republican governors in the past than they had with Democratic governors. And so I figured, there's no reason why we can't get things done. Go back to the mode that existed when Jim Edgar was governor or Jim Thompson or George Ryan, where the governor had his priorities, the Democrats had theirs. They would sit down and negotiate. Nobody was a complete winner. Nobody was a complete loser. And we kept things moving. And what I wasn't taking into account was the fact that Governor Rauner has a different approach to things. He does not believe in negotiating in the sense, I have to give you something. It's more, I have to get my way. And you have to lose. And so he seems to be more determined to defeat Mike Madigan and humble Mike Madigan. And the flip side is Madigan seems determined to teach Bruce Rauner a lesson. And if both guys would just step back and think of the damage that's being done to Illinois and say, okay, let's find some common ground because the average citizen, particularly people who rely on those human services or people, low-income families wanting to send their kids to college, they need us to do something. So let's figure out what we can do and stop this partisan bickering long enough for the state to move forward.
Well, is it possible that both could come out viewed, I guess, as winners in some way by putting aside, you know, a little bit of their personal animosity and maybe being able to do some things that they can tout and looked as though did the right thing?
Yeah. I mean, you look at what has been accomplished. There have been real strides made in criminal justice reform, bipartisan. So that could be something that both people could point to and say, look, when we work together, we're able to do this. We're able to advance more intelligent, more humane from the civil libertarian point of view, and more efficient from the financial conservative point of view, ways of dealing with law enforcement. And we can both take credit for it. We work together on it. But as I say, it's this constant, on the Republican side, it's this constant attempt to portray Michael Madigan as the villain responsible for everything that's gone wrong in Illinois, as I once said facetiously, since Abraham Lincoln was assassinated. And on the Democrat side, I think it's getting their back up and saying, okay, we're going to teach you a lesson. And until this mentality changes, I don't see anything getting solved unless there is something that causes Illinois citizens to rise en masse. And Senator Kaler suggested one thing might be no funding for K-12 and tell the leadership, okay, enough of this nonsense, enough of this garbage that's being spewed out daily. Let's solve the problems before us.
Go ahead, Brian. I think you were going to jump in there.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, I think the Governor Rauner and the Republicans could be, I don't know if you want to say, forgiven for coming into office thinking that there would be some number of Democrats who would be willing to make that bargain to say, okay, we will agree to these pro-business, maybe even anti-union pieces of legislation in order to fund human services, social services. And because that's an argument we heard from Democrats when they passed the pension overhaul that was later ruled unconstitutional. But I remember talking to Democrats who say, look, state government is just, there's only so much money. You can only raise taxes so far. And that's the political reality of things. And therefore, we have to find somewhere to bend the cost curve of pensions in order to continue funding things that are even more important for for government to do, like education and human services. And so I think the Republicans could be forgiven for thinking that maybe they could find some Democrats to work with them on that. But I think where it perhaps went off the rails is that when that was combined with things that look like they were aimed at destroying the Republic or the Democratic Party, or at least certainly really curbing their power. The governor was a big advocate of term limits. Mike Madigan, as we've said, was portrayed as the root of all that's wrong with state government and has been relentlessly so portrayed that way for 2 years. The REMAP proposal, which goes at the heart of where the Democratic power has come from in the last 10 years. I think that Democrats saw that and, as somebody said, got their backs up. And now it's I think the Democrats view themselves as in a fight for their political future. Sure, they can cut a deal with the governor now to save social service spending for FY16 and fiscal year 17 and 18, maybe. But what about when the governor has more control over the map, as they see it, and the governor has an infinite supply of money to spend? What's social service spending going to look like in 2022, 2023, and the indefinite future?
Bernie,
It might be pointed out that the Democrats continue, even though there was erosion in their ranks in the last election with all of the millions of dollars spent against them, they still have very strong majorities in the House and Senate. So if you want to do what Scott Walker did in Wisconsin, well, he had a Republican legislature. Illinois still has a Democratic legislature, and they're not just going to roll over on things that are core values to them.
Bernie, you have an interesting point of view because you cover the Springfield area, especially Sangamon County. It is a Republican area, and yet there are a lot of state workers, people who rely on state government. From what you've heard from folks, is Bruce Rauner's, do they still have his back on a lot of these issues, the typical Springfield Republican?
I think the Republican who's not so involved in government and politics from day to day likes what they hear. Bruce Rauner, business people, Bruce Rauner will tell you at events, I get people coming up to me every day, stick with it, don't give in to Madigan, do this stuff. He actually does get that stuff in lots of places. I get a lot more muted tones from some of the people who have been in the process for a long time who are political, and they just kind of shut up about it because they see what's happening. They see that, a Jim Edgar, a Jim Thompson, was able to compromise with Mike Madigan, get stuff done, and the Democrats. And they see that Bruce Rauner's way is, my way or the highway. But they don't want to take him on publicly because, you're talking about a guy who clearly, spends his money easily attacking his enemies. I mean, one of the big examples of this, a lot of people were completely offended. There's one Republican Senator, Sam McCann, who took on Rauner by siding with the unions, voting for a bill and for an override of a bill that would have allowed arbitration to try to solve this AFSCME contract that's been out there forever. And Bruce Rauner, somehow his team found a guy, Bryce Benton, who's a state policeman, to run against Sam McCann in a primary. And it was at the Lincoln Day dinner in Sangamon County that Bruce Rauner, by video, made a big announcement to the 1,000 people there, I'm for Bryce Benton and be with me. And Sam McCann was there on the dais, part of the Sangamon County Republican organization, even though, he represents part of Sangamon County. He lives in Macoupin. And people were horribly offended at that. But people, Benton lost, McCann won that primary. But that's the kind of thing people, they said then they were upset, but very few people said it publicly.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the highway there a moment ago, because a lot of people are hitting the highway and heading out of Illinois. Illinois led the nation in the number of people moving out of state last year. So population loss there, according to census numbers, that was from 2015 through 2016, ending in the summer months. Brian, can we read anything into this? Is Bruce Rauner right that people just want to leave Illinois and they don't like what they're seeing here? And, is it ripe for political fodder?
I mean, of course it's ripe for political fodder, because in politics nowadays, you just take any number or statistic that you can use to argue on your behalf, and sometimes people make them up, but if one comes along that's real, hey, all the better. So yes, we heard a lot of talk about right away the Illinois Policy Institute, a conservative think tank that's very closely aligned. Its message is very closely aligned with that of the governor, said it's clear that people are looking at the workers' compensation policies of Illinois government and they're hitting the road and going to other states. Of course, what they don't point out is that one of the biggest growth states is California, which is, kind of viewed by a lot of conservatives as a socialist heck hole, to use that language. So, I mean, it's not as though people are only moving to states that have the supposedly great pro-business climate. California, I think, was ranked like 48th in terms of state tax climates. So, I mean, there's a lot of factors in Illinois, right? There's the weather. There's, what is it? Oh, yes, state government is horribly dysfunctional. One of the biggest areas we see people leaving, or I should say, not areas geographically, one of the biggest demographic groups, there's a huge rate compared to others of 18 and 19-year-olds. These are people who are going to college, and they are choosing not to go to college in Illinois, in part because there's a question about whether those colleges will still be around in 4 years, especially if you're talking about some of the directional universities like Western, Eastern, Chicago State. They are really struggling under this dysfunctional state government and the lack of a budget. And so I think that is one of the things that is driving people out, and that's difficult to argue with. A lot of the other stuff, is it the workers' compensation policy? Is it this? Is it the weather? A lot of that is just difficult to tell from this level of data, because we don't ask about, the Census Bureau doesn't ask why you're leaving. They just note that people have left.
And Charlie, I think you were going to weigh in.
No, I was going to say that there were eight states that from 2015 to 2016, the Census Bureau estimated lost population. We had the largest loss. And the only state that had a higher percentage loss than us was West Virginia. And the states that had losing population tended to be in the Northeast and in the Midwest. And the Census Bureau pointed out in their news release, this is continuing an ongoing trend where the South and the Southwest are picking up population. Now, in the case of Illinois, you could blame it all on Mike Madigan. But on the other hand, Madigan doesn't have a whole lot of sway, I don't think, in West Virginia or in Connecticut or in Vermont.
I wouldn't put
it
past him, though.
Or Wyoming or Pennsylvania, New York or Mississippi.
I wouldn't put it past him. Who knows?
Yeah, and so it's part of a trend that's been going on for a long time. And then Rich Miller, in his Capital Facts, pointed out that this movement has been going on basically ever since they invented air conditioning so that you could live in Texas during the summer.
So Illinois is losing this, and that's going to probably have an impact maybe in the next census. Who knows? We may lose some congressional representation. We may lose another seat. Who knows if it's that much of a population loss? That does come up in things like the Electoral College, and the Electoral College met this week. No surprise there, Bernie, you watched this in action. They cast their votes for Hillary Clinton. She won the state. Anything that did surprise you, though, that you saw that day?
Well, I guess everybody knew that all of the votes in Illinois were going to Hillary Clinton. It was uncertain if people who were the electors would react to the whole Trump/Russia/, questions nationwide. And it turned out that as the electors in this very staid little observance walked to the ballot box and put in their paper ballots, I guess the strongest statement came from Lauren Beth Gash. She's on the Democratic State Central Committee. She's a former state representative from Highland Park. And she gave a little speech part of which is our democracy is founded on the principle that people have free and fair elections. When that ideal is threatened, whether through intentional voter suppression or by direct interference from foreign actors seeking to harm our legitimate process, our entire nation suffers. And so she said there should be a thorough independent investigation of the election. That was about as close as it got, other than, you know, the Democrats going through the motion of voting for Hillary Clinton, knowing that they had lost that one.
And was there any talk about, in Illinois at least, that there was movement to want to see changes in the Electoral College, the whole process?
Actually, there was. A state representative from Urbana, Carol Ammons, said that to reporters afterwards that this is crazy. You know, 2 to 3 million more people voted for Hillary Clinton nationwide than Donald Trump, and so therefore we should go to a system that does that. And I did see a press release also from Senator Dick Durbin. He is also on that popular vote bandwagon.
Well, and Illinois was the third state to pass this national popular vote, where if enough states ever get on board, you have to get to 270. That's a common number everybody knows now, the number of electoral votes you need to win. If everyone gets to, if enough states to meet 270 get on board, then those states have agreed by their state statutes to throw their electoral votes to the popular vote winner. Right now, though, it's just, I think, New York, Illinois, mostly blue states. There have been support. Former Governor Jim Edgar was on the national board of this group. And I think it would probably take the reverse happening, maybe where a Republican wins the popular vote but loses the Electoral College. Then you might see some bipartisan movement.
But, and that might be what Dick Durbin was talking about, Illinois being a part of. But we'll see. You know,
yeah.
I saw the headline and I didn't delve into it.
All right. Yeah, I think the prospects for a constitutional amendment are pretty slim, because it would require the support of some of the states who benefit from the way the Electoral College is set up now. The small states that, because every state gets two senators, have a disproportionate influence over the larger states. And it's been that way since the beginning of the Republic. And I guess it goes back, you could say that to win a World Series, a team only has to score 4 runs. And it doesn't matter how many total runs they score. It's whoever wins 4 games.
Time now for our notes from the field. Brian, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I just wanted to note that there was a Chicago homeless shelter where Governor Rauner, or I should say then Governor-elect Rauner, and his wife had shown up a couple years ago to work at the soup kitchen. It's going to be closing in part because the city of Chicago has not increased its funding and then just did not renew the contract for this group. The city blames the state budget impasse for this. So just another sign of how the state budget crisis is trickling down to hurt some of the most needy people in our society.
And Bernie?
Yeah, I got to cover something that showed that Illinois still draws people from around the world for a good reason. Ban Ki-moon, who is ending this year as Secretary General of the United Nations, came to Lincoln's tomb in Oak Ridge Cemetery in Springfield, visited there, talked briefly about how Lincoln showed great compassionate leadership when this country was divided, and how the whole world needs his kind of leadership today to become more united. So how about that for a positive look towards the new year?
And we'll wrap up this week for State Week. Members of our broadcast today include Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, and Bernie Schoenberg. You can get a podcast of the show at nprillinois.org and also find us on NPR One. Look for State Week. The production assistance for the program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.